Hikers and bird watchers in forests might notice that energy developments changing the landscape among the trees. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. You're listening to the Allegheny Front. Today, how people are learning and sharing information about industry in state forests. And a major wind farm, debated for years, won't fly. In central Pennsylvania, some trailer park residents have been forced to leave their homes so Marcellus drillers can get water for hydraulic fracturing. And a new invasive algae, rock snot, shows up in new locations. Ew. Please stay tuned for this and more on the Allegheny Front. If you go fishing or boating in the Youghiogheny River, Pennsylvania officials want to make sure you scrub down your gear to prevent the spread of an invasive algae with a highly descriptive name of rock snot. The Allegheny Front's Megan Zagorski reports.
It took 2 months to confirm, but now Didymo, more commonly known as rock snot, has been documented in the Youghiogheny River at Ohiopyle State Park in the southwestern part of the state. Terry Brady with the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources says Didymo shouldn't affect Ohiopyle visitors.
The park is open and that there is no overt danger to human beings, pets, that type of thing.
But Didymo does pose a threat to the ecosystem. That's because Didymo forms a thick carpet on the bottom of streams and rivers, plugging the nooks and crannies where fish, mussels, and other aquatic wildlife live. It clings to rocks, giving them a fuzzy appearance. Hence the rock snot nickname. Didymo can't be removed from a waterway once it's there, but its spread can be prevented if anglers and boaters clean their gear carefully. Didymo most likely traveled to the Youghiogheny by hitching a ride on boats and other equipment, and a single live cell of Didymo can explode into a full-blown infestation. State officials will monitor the algae to try to contain its spread. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Megan Zagorski.
Just over 3 months ago, residents of a mobile home park in central Pennsylvania were told they had to leave. The Riverdale Mobile Home Park near Jersey Shore had been sold, and the new owners planned to put in a water withdrawal facility to service nearby fracking activities. WPSU's Emily Reddy went to the mobile home park in its final days, and she filed this report for the Allegheny Front.
At the very back of the Riverdale Mobile Home Park, farthest from the busy road out front, Deb Eck stands in front of her trailer. It's perched on a bank overlooking the Susquehanna River, a view she enjoys.
I mean, who wouldn't want to wake up to seeing this every day?
But the river Eck loves is the very reason she's now a trespasser in the place she's lived for 10 years. In February, the mobile home park was bought by Aqua PVR, a company which plans to pipe water from the river to Marcellus Shale drilling operations about 15 miles away. Aqua PVR wants to build a water withdrawal facility here that will pull up to 3 million gallons of water a day from the river. But first, they'll have to get Eck and her two daughters and six other families to leave.
What are your options now?
We don't have many. Walk away and hope and pray we can find some place to rent. We're not willing to do that. These are our homes. I paid good money for my trailer.
The company hired a realtor to help residents find somewhere to move to and offered $2,500 to anyone who left before June 1st. A few months ago, 32 families lived at Riverdale. Now just seven remain.
There's nobody left in this row. And there's nobody left in that row over there. The white trailer that you see.
Eck and the other residents who are still here say they have nowhere to go. Moving a trailer can cost anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000, and that's if they can find some place to put it.
Some of them won't allow metal roof and metal siding. So you have to have like vinyl siding, shingle roof, that sort of stuff. Mine is metal roof and metal siding. It's 76 foot long, so not every park will take it because of its size.
Not all mobile homes can even be moved. The owners of several trailers that were just too old to move have stripped them bare. The insulation is exposed where the siding has been pulled off the outside. Inside, residents have salvaged paneling, fixtures, and appliances, leaving empty shells. Families here who owned their own mobile homes paid just $200 a month in lot rental fees. Kevin June lives on disability payments and says he has nowhere to go.
I'm on SSI, very limited income. And with the price of rent anywhere near a gas site is like 3 or 4 times what it was before the gas industry came in. I mean, I could sleep in a tent somewhere. And then what happens when the snow flies?
Our intention was to help. That's why we offered $2,500. That's why we went back and redesigned the footprint of our project. That's why we never collected for water and sewer fees.
Donna Alston is manager of communications for Aqua America, the parent company of one half of Aqua PVR. She says in addition to the cash incentive for residents to leave, the company redesigned the water pumping facility so that its construction would disturb fewer lots and construction could start while residents were still moving out. And Aqua America hasn't collected lot rents or utility payments since they bought the land in February. Alston points out that most residents have found other options.
We wanted to help smooth the transition, and I believe that we did that, as evidenced by the fact that the overwhelming majority of the people who used to live there have been able to relocate.
Alston also points out that environmentally, this water facility is a good thing. The first phase of the pipeline replaced 2,000 water truck trips a day.
And, you know, it helps communities relative to heavy volumes of traffic. It helps, you know, roadways where trucks are carrying large volumes of water on roads that were never really designed to carry that volume and that weight.
People don't realize behind every wheel of every truck out here is a family. It's just not, you know, an oil company. There's a family behind that wheel.
Eric Daniels drives one of those water trucks. He also used to live at the Riverdale Mobile Home Park. He's been coming back in the mornings to salvage what he can from his trailer. He worries this water pumping station might cost him both his home and his job. Daniel says the truckers that honk as they pass might be worried for their jobs like he is, but they're also showing solidarity with the Riverdale residents.
Even while we're in the industry, we all support communities. We would never support tearing down a community, you know, and taking people's homes. This is not part of the industry. This is not what, you know, we represent. And all of these local truck drivers that you hear honking, they're local. They live here.
The residents have drawn another group of supporters as well, anti-fracking activists. Many of them, like Kelly Finnan, are from other fracking areas. Finnan is originally from Hop Bottom, which is just outside Dimmock.
Dimmock being more or less ground zero for water contamination in Pennsylvania from hydrofracking. I came here in part to help the families that are here who are being displaced from their community, but also because I'm concerned about the air and the water in the state of Pennsylvania.
About 30 activists have quite literally set up camp here. Their tents sit where there were once mobile homes. They've made one of the abandoned trailers into their headquarters and another into a medic station. They're talking about planting a flower garden. The activists and residents have set up an unlikely partnership. But on this particular afternoon, Deb Eck gathers the activists to give them some bad news.
When I first got involved with all of you guys, I didn't know anything about hydraulic fracturing. I knew nothing. When I found out what hydraulic fracturing was all about, I realized that I not only have to protect my home, I have to protect that river too. And now I have to shift my focus back to just protecting my family.
I'm Emily Reddy, WPSU.
You're listening to the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. This week, the protesters did leave Riverdale at the request of the remaining residents, whose lawyers are still in negotiations with the company. Construction on a pipeline there has begun. Coming up on the Allegheny Front, rehabbing old computers into tools for homework and fun.
This is a machine that was destined for the trash, but still is going to be used here probably for another 5 or 6 years. And it took us about an hour to get it ready to go help a child.
putting e-waste back to work, later on today's Allegheny Front. As we just heard, some people are literally having to leave their homes so that gas drilling companies can reach the massive amounts of water needed in the hydraulic fracturing process. As gas extraction has spread, so have concerns about the safety of well water. More than 3 million Pennsylvanians get their water from wells. Private wells are neither monitored nor regulated by the state. The Allegheny Front's Ann Murray reports that a health group has released guidelines for well owners near drilling sites.
The Southwest Pennsylvania Environmental Health Project wants private well owners to pay close attention to their drinking water, especially well owners who live near gas extraction areas. The Washington County-based group says poorly managed drilling sites, leaky wastewater ponds, or accidental spills can potentially send pollutants into surface or groundwaters, which supply private wells. The organizations outlined a monitoring strategy and steps to take if owners notice a problem with well water. Project Director Raina Ripple says her group's guidelines are more comprehensive than state or federal water quality standards.
The federal standards and also the state standards are going to be set at levels that don't take into account multiple chemicals interacting within the human body. These multiple chemicals are going to be present potentially within the well water.
Ripple says the interaction of chemicals can make them more toxic. The state says it hasn't seen any evidence that hydraulic fracturing has contaminated groundwater, but there have been cases of methane migration into water wells as a result of abandoned or improperly cased gas wells. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Ann Murray.
In a moment, we'll hear about how both gas drilling and wind development can impact forests and sensitive bird species. Now, though, we learn that prevailing winds are not blowing in one energy producer's favor. Gamesa, a Spanish company that runs wind production plants in Pennsylvania, has canceled a controversial power project. The Allegheny Front's Ann Murray has more.
Gamesa's six-year fight for a wind turbine farm is over. The project was planned for Schaefer Mountain in central Pennsylvania. The proposed site was atop a ridgeline that's a major corridor for migrating hawks, eagles, and bats. It's also close to an endangered Indiana bat colony. The location has drawn criticism from environmentalist and sportsmen's groups from day one. But David Rosenberg, vice president of marketing for Gamesa, says his company's decision to cancel the 30-turbine project is wrapped around federal subsidies.
The uncertainty around the production tax credit brought this to a head, and it just made sense for us to make the decision.
Gamesa's permits were held up last fall after an endangered Indiana bat was found dead under a wind turbine about 30 miles away. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is still reviewing the situation. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Ann Murray.
Listen to this. The flute-like call of the hermit thrush, a little light brown speckled bird, was described by Theodore Roosevelt as the sweetest sound in the wilderness. A Carnegie Museum of Natural History educator, Pat McShay, is working to let people know that that sound could be silenced if we aren't careful. Careful, that is, about how and where roads are put in for gas drilling and wind turbines. He's introducing young people and their families to the concept of forest fragmentation. And he's inviting them to play a game in which plastic playing pieces featuring birds are scooted around aerial maps of forests. Never one to pass up a board game, I joined him at the Pittsburgh Museum.
But I'm supposed to think like a bird, not like somebody who wants to live in a house.
Exactly. Riverview might mean nothing to you as a bird.
Well, I'm just going to go straight in the middle of the forest because I'll be hidden.
That's a good strategy. You picked a place where there is forest all around you. I'm going to introduce my playing piece, which is a cowbird. The female cowbird lays her eggs in other birds' nests. Cowbirds are reluctant to go deep into the forest, though, but they will venture about 100 yards from wide openings. And the diameter of my piece corresponds to about 100 yards. So I'm going to move it up from the town of Ohio Powell, right where the bike trail is. There's kind of a wide corridor here where the railroad used to run. Plenty wide for a cowbird, and I'm going to move it up to a point where it can actually bump against your piece. Your bird probably did not pick a great place to nest because it picked a place that could be easily discovered by a cowbird.
What other value can you talk about these birds having to us other than, you know, beautiful songs?
The most important thing, and maybe the hardest for us to understand, is that whether it's present or not is a marker of the conditions that would be required by all kinds of other creatures, from literally invertebrates in the soil to insects on the leaves of the trees. The next step, though, is to pretend you're that same bird returning to an area such as Bald Eagle State Park, where the forest is already fragmented.
Oh, that's tougher, because obviously there's not as much there's not as many trees that are kind of undisturbed.
Even though it's a beautiful place to visit, where a forest, a bird that requires deep forest conditions, can pick a nest spot that will not potentially be parasitized by a cowbird.
What's kind of the response, I guess, in general to this section? Are people saying, you know, hogwash?
The response, it's a little tricky, and if I had thought it through, it's not surprising at all. Part of the message is that some bird species actually do very well with forest fragmentation. The edge effect, the mix of forest and field and regenerating forest is actually very, very good for some bird species. We've got a mockingbird, you turn it over, it says forest fragmentation winner. Some bird species, their populations will almost certainly increase. One of the challenges here is if people are watching a little bit of their backyard birds and really come to value goldfinches and cardinals, and you tell them that the populations of those species will likely increase with forest fragmentation, they'll say, well, that's a good thing. There's no downside to that. The question we get with people, well, what can be done kind of thing. In terms of new energy sources in Pennsylvania, those sources are tremendously important, but the problems of forest fragmentation can be minimized with some planning. In the case of shale gas development, that might mean that pipelines share road corridor accesses. Even that companies might be able to share transmitting pipelines.
Well, thanks very much for speaking with me.
Oh, you're very welcome. I was happy to do it.
That was Carnegie Museum of Natural History educator Pat McShea, who's letting people know how forest fragmentation can impact birds. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier has done extensive reporting on forest fragmentation, flying high above the trees with a Nature Conservancy expert. He recently won a Golden Quill Award from the Western Pennsylvania Press Club for this coverage. You can find his story on our website, AlleghenyFront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. Bird songs aren't the only indicator of what's happening in our forests. Hikers, mountain bikers, and other outdoor enthusiasts who spend time in the woods are being asked to document what impacts they're seeing from shale gas development. FrackTracker.org is an interactive website that maps and tracks data of all kinds related to shale gas. It's looking to get the scoop from those with boots on the ground. And FrackTracker's Sam Malone is in the studio with me to talk about this. Thanks for stopping by the studio.
Thanks for having me today, Jennifer.
So what prompted you to reach out to hikers for help?
Well, it was actually hikers that we heard from originally who were reporting some changes in the trails that they were using on a regular basis, hunters that were used to being able to take a certain trail to their favorite locations, who were saying that they were not able to actually access the areas they had originally wanted to go to. And so we wanted to track that and see if there was any sort of way we could provide some feedback and some help in improving the experience of people who are using the forest for recreation.
And what was happening? Why couldn't they get there?
Mostly it was just access roads that had been put through those areas so that either the trails were cut off or rerouted, and sometimes several miles in another direction around a well pad.
So staff members at the Keystone Trails, which is a partner agency with you on this project, said they've heard lots of anecdotal tales about hikers running into shale-related issues on trails. Is there anything else that you didn't mention yet that they're seeing?
I think there was just a lot of concern that this was going to be something that would impact recreation on a state level. And it was, you know, it was something that we were interested in. As Fact Checker, we like to be able to map a lot of the data that comes in. And we thought this was a great opportunity to map some of the feedback coming in from people who probably wouldn't be using the site on other for other reasons.
So how does it work? People can go online, I understand, or get a physical kind of logbook.
Yes, we wanted to be able to provide two different ways that people could provide data into this system. The one is the traditional approach of going into our website. It's fracktracker.org/logbook. And there they can enter data directly in an online form that asks them questions like what trail they're on, what they're experiencing. Or they can enter that kind of data through, it's sort of like a postcard, and they can mail it in and we'll enter the data for them.
What kinds of things are you asking hikers to track?
Mostly we just wanted to get some general feedback on is it loud noises, aesthetic changes, what kinds of operations are you noticing that are going on in near these trails? And this is mostly so that other hikers and people who are using that area will be aware of it.
How are you handling the information that people send?
It's sort of on an ongoing basis. We wanted to take a look at what people were providing and sort of judge whether this was something that needed immediate feedback from the state level, from the Department of Conservation of Natural Resources, if it was in a state forest, for example. And we would be able to just handle it according to the level of severity of the issue. And in all of the cases that we received so far, actually, they've been very minor.
So you haven't had to bring them to the DCNR's attention. You're just kind of...
Right now we're just tracking it. Eventually, when we bring in enough data, we'd like to be able to map it and look at it on a comprehensive scale.
Is there any geographic area you're asking people to look at or that you're seeing response about or one that's a particular concern?
The state forests are obviously a concern, but we've received feedback from several different counties. It hasn't been any one specific location or one specific operation that's been a concern so far.
How can somebody get a logbook or go online to pitch in?
If you just go to fracktracker.org/logbook, the online form is right there. There's also a printable form that you can click on and print it out and then mail it in. Or we have physical copies in our Pittsburgh location, which we're getting a new office, which is exciting. And then we also have the printed ones that are available from the director in Camp Hill.
And they could call somewhere?
Yes, you can call. Right now, the number to call would be 412-648-8541.
Okay, thanks very much.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jennifer.
This is the Allegheny Front. I've been speaking with Sam Malone from fracktracker.org. They track data on the Marcellus Shale gas development, and now they'll be asking people who spend time in the forest, hikers, bikers, hunters, to talk about what they're seeing. Besides wind and gas energy development, coal is also in the news. Pennsylvania Republicans say the Environmental Protection Agency declared war on coal. U.S. House Representative Tim Murphy is one of those speaking out in protest about the EPA's proposed rule capping carbon emissions from future coal-fired power plants at 1,000 pounds of carbon dioxide per kilowatt hour. Murphy said the regulations the EPA has set have already resulted in 5 plants shutting down in Pennsylvania.
We have the energy resources to unleash tremendous prosperity in this land, but first and only if the federal government gets out of the way.
At a public hearing in Pittsburgh held by City Council this week, though, all the speakers were in favor of the EPA's proposed rule, citing carbon pollution's contribution to global warming and the fact that carbon emissions are linked to asthma and breathing problems. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. This is the Allegheny Front. An estimated 2.5 million tons of computers and other electronic waste are tossed out each year in the country. Only about 25% is recycled. The rest takes up space in landfills and sometimes seeps lead and other hazardous chemicals into the ground and water supply. One local nonprofit's found a way to reduce that toxic load and help people, too. The Allegheny Front's Kara Holsapple has this story.
A few students are gathered in the computer lab of an after-school program south of Pittsburgh. It's almost the last day before summer vacation, so it's a little quieter than usual.
I'm not really sure what my level is right now. I think I'm on level 2, so.
Eighth grader Jordan Harris is furiously pressing keys to keep a virtual rainbow marble from slipping off a maze of platforms in a game called Marble Blast.
There I go again. I'm like the master of falling off cliffs. Sheesh.
Harris's marble is falling into oblivion on one of 10 computers donated by Computer Reach, a Pittsburgh nonprofit that refurbishes older model computers, mostly Macs, and gives them to community groups that need them. Her computer, which she's named Ruby, came preloaded with educational software and balancing games like Marble Blast. There's one for each kid in this new program for middle school students. Many don't have computers at home or have to share. The computers come from a warehouse in Pittsburgh, stacked from floor to ceiling with neat rows of all the parts needed to build a complete computer: keyboards, screens, cables. That's where Dave Sevick, the head of Computer Reach, makes sure each reused machine is up to snuff.
This little cable right here is the power source. It goes right into the back of the hard drive to power it. So when you turn on your computer, all the components spin up at one time.
Mac consultant Sevick started the organization 11 years ago in his basement with just a few machines found in a dumpster. And he's still pulling out logic boards and replacing old hard drives with faster ones.
It's quite simple, and something you can teach to any volunteer that comes here to lend a hand to make this all work.
With the help of volunteers, over 3,000 refurbished computers have new lives in area schools, shelters, and community centers since 2001. Some have been shipped as far as Liberia and El Salvador. Sevick says his group is careful about where the computers end up. When they do reach the end of their usefulness, Sevick says they're recycled responsibly, and that educating the kids and adults who receive the computers is part of closing that loop.
I let them know that these most likely came from Elizabeth School District. They were cleaned by us at Goodwill. The keyboards were tested at Easter Seals. The packing was done from Giant Eagle bags, and explain and tell them we're going to take all of the scraps away so there's no wasted material.
Computer Reach reclaimed about 200 tons of material from the waste stream last year. But it's clear that environmental impact is only part of the equation.
This is a machine that was destined for the trash, but still is going to be used here probably for another 5 or 6 years. And it took us about an hour to get it ready to go help a child. That's what we're all about.
Jordan Harris has seen big benefits from the program. She says it helps to work on math, her least favorite homework, in the lab. And she researches gemstones, a subject she likes much better. But she's also making a connection about the environment. Her serious Marble Blast game face breaks into a big smile when asked how she feels using a refurbished computer.
I try to find ways to help the planet out, and right now we're going to be using bottles to make crafts and stuff for school. I like helping reusing a lot because, you know, it helps.
She says she'll be back again next year for more Marble Blast and homework. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Kara Holsapple.
Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front. I'm Jason Kolditz, a Facebook fan of the show, selected for a tour of the studios of Essential Public Radio and WYEP, where Allegheny Front is produced. You can listen anytime at AlleghenyFront.org. Joey Svihar is the Allegheny Front's production director. Kathy Naur is the executive producer. And again, I'm Jason, an Allegheny Front listener and Facebook follower. Join us again next time for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
The Allegheny Front is supported by the Heinz Endowments. The Colcom Foundation and the Richard King Mellon Foundation support coverage of Marcellus Shale issues.